America's long-standing interest in Italy is rooted in both fascination and skepticism. We love the food, the music, fashion, and of course, vacationing there. The Italians' way of being is, to us, mystical, alluring, and imperfect all at once. We just can't get enough of it. Journalist Beppe Severnini has been a keen observer of his country for decades, from his position as an editor and columnist for Italy's largest daily newspaper in Milan. In his book, Italian Lessons, 50 Things We Know About Life Now, Beppe offers insight into the Italian mind and spirit after living through the pandemic and how Italians cope with and overcome uncertainty. Beppe, thanks so much for joining us.
It's a pleasure, Rick. Here I am.
Yeah, you know, I remember when COVID was just hitting the scene and Italy seemed to be really hit hard. It seems in Europe, each society dealt with the pandemic differently. When you look back on it, how did being Italian impact the way your society lived through and survived those difficult years?
Well, let's say the first year, 2020, I was surprised and proud. Italy reacted in a brave, collective way, which is very important in a crisis, but a pandemic is something that no one has experienced. My father had. My father was born in 1917 and he knew the Spanish flu. But we didn't know what that was, you know, a pandemic. So Italy reacted in a way, and in a way, all the Italian networks, the small towns are working, families are working, groups of friends, cafe, so people are talking to each other more than in other parts of Europe. Then something switched. 2021 was different. All the habits of quarreling and discussing and shall we get vaccinated or not, and so on and so forth. But I want to say, and I'll stop here, Eric, that Italian Lessons, I started writing during the pandemic, but it's not a book about the pandemic. It's a book about things that we do well. And the pandemic helped me to understand some of them. But most of them, the 50 things we do really well in Italy, the book is about them, that they have nothing to do with the pandemic.
Yeah, and as I was reading through your Italian Lessons book, it occurred to me that the piazza, where Italy comes together, is so integral to being Italian. And the piazza was not possible during the lockdown when people couldn't go out. Did you find that it was a particular challenge for Italy as a society to cope if you didn't have that opportunity to come together in the piazza? It's like you lost one of your major advantages, was this magic of the piazza.
The piazza and the living together, we suffer psychologically more. Not only the virus, COVID, struck here after China, it came to Italy. And of all places, exactly where I live, the southern part of Lombardy. So not only we suffer for that, but the whole of Italy, because of the lockdown that had to be introduced, we suffered because talking to each other, being each other, sort of touching each other, hugging each other is so much part of our life that being, you know, prevented, it was not possible. It was unsafe to do that. And there was an extra suffering. I know, Rick, your Scandinavian background, your Norwegian background. I'm not saying that in Norway or Scandinavia they didn't suffer, but in fact, people have less that sort of tendency to stay together, spend time together, hugging, yeah, talking, and integrating.
No, for Scandinavians, it was almost a blessing. We didn't have to be with
I couldn't people. Say that. I couldn't say that. But I know your background and your... And so I brought that up.
Yes. And, you know, right now we have this situation all over the world where people who go to work are working from home. And I would imagine that's a bigger adjustment in Italy. In the workplace, just like the piazza, you need to be together. Is there a discussion in Italy about this hybrid where people are telecommuting versus going to the office? Or in Italy, is there more of a demand to have people together in the office?
Well, first of all, Rick, let me tell you, you probably know this, but our listeners may not, that in Italy, remote working from home or remote working is called smart working in English. I don't know why smart working, who knows? But the smart working has kind of not gone out of fashion, but many employers, including my newspaper, are insisting that people go back to work. Some of them, yesterday, there was actually the man who reads my book in America, is called Edoardo Ballerini. He's a super narrator and an actor. And Eduardo was telling me, and his wife works for the New York Times, and we were discussing just this yesterday in my country house about the fact that Americans, many employers ask you, are discussing, are you sure we want everybody away? In Italy, somehow people sort of flocked back almost voluntarily, let's put it this way.
Well, Italians like the energy. I know when I choose a hotel room in Italy, they ask me, would I like a room, a quiet room on the back, or would I like a noisy room on the front? They remind me Italians prefer the noisy room on the front. I prefer the quiet room on the back, but Italians will pay more to be close to the energy in the street, even if it means losing some sleep.
Do you know that, in fact, I almost always ask for a room on the street because I like the sound of life outside, if it's not too much, because I'm getting older, so if it's too much, it's too much.
This is Travel with Rick Steves. We're talking with Beppe Severnini. He's an Italian journalist, columnist, and essayist. And Beppe's written a number of fascinating books. He wrote La Bella Figura, A Field Guide to the Italian Mind. He wrote Off the Rails, A Train Trip Through Life, and a book called Ciao America, An Italian Discovers the U.S. Today we're discussing his latest book, written after living through the pandemic. It's called Italian Lessons, 50 Things We Know About Life Now. Hey, Beppe, I love this idea in Italy of bella chaos. We say chaos in Italy, they say beautiful chaos. And in spite of the chaos, Italy seems to function quite well. And you even wrote in your book, no Italian would be willing to admit what I'm about to say without adding a litany of complaints and grievances, but the fact does remain we live very nicely in Italy. So the chaos is part of that mix, isn't it?
Yes. When it's too much, again, like the noise in the street is too much. But we are built, and in a way, the chaotic, the life in Italy, the business, the history of Italy has been chaotic. So we are used to an element of chaos, as you say. So we are sort of, is built into our characters, I guess. If it's too quiet, we worry. No, yes, we love being with other people, and if they're a little noisy, even better.
I like the way your book has 50 bite-sized little chapters about lessons of life and how we can learn, really, from the Italian love of life. I was fascinated by the little chapter about Italians have fun without getting filthy drunk. And you mentioned your father, who lived to be nearly 100 years old, believed that water with a meal created internal rust. I like that. You really want to have wine with your meal, don't you?
Yes, he had a glass of wine, lunch and dinner, and he lived to be 100. Of course, he had plenty of water during the day, after his meal, but not while he was having his food.
That's one thing I'm a little Italian about, in spite of my Norwegian background. I don't want to drink for my thirst at my dinner. I want to have a drink that complements what I'm eating. There's another dimension of drinking in Italy, which is the aperitivo culture and the spritz culture. And you commented on that. It is interesting how young people, they just love to have a spritz and a little happy hour. The Prosecco is everywhere.
Yes. Originally, that piece, I first wrote a column for the New York Times, and that was originally the idea about the aperitivo and what it actually means. It's a ritual. It's part of our living together.
And I recommend my travelers to be sure to factor that into your sightseeing. I don't care how many museums you want to see. Take an hour in the square and have a spritz and be there as the sun goes down and be part of the community. It's a beautiful opportunity.
Absolutely,
for a traveler.
Rick. And if I may, tell your readers and listeners, not only do that, but when you're sitting in a beautiful Italian cafe and you have an aperitivo, you could be a glass of vino bianco, white wine, or a spritz, or whatever you want, don't look at your phones, look at the people. Because the phones is going to be with you when you go back, and when at night. But that hour, just leave the phone alone. Watch the world in front of you.
And Americans should remember that we're a window on a fascinating land for Italians. Italians, you'll see, out have an aperitivo. They speak some English. So be bold, buy somebody a drink. It'll cost you $5. And tap into that aperitivo, that happy hour before dinner culture.
Well, of course, Rick, if I may, if our listeners have a lot of money, but I mean really a lot of money, they could hire the Colosseum and do like Elon Musk, Zuckerberg, and clash and fight each other. It's a little expensive, but if you really have a lot of money and you say, okay, aperitivo is not enough. No, I'm joking.
Okay,
don't do that.
No, yeah.
I don't think they'll do that.
I'm the budget traveler. I say the best $20 I ever spent was buying four students a spritz in Verona and a beautiful square. I was their best friend. We all had this beautiful spritz, and I had four buddies to talk to me and get me part of the scene, and I learned all about student life in that beautiful town of Romeo and Juliet. Beppe Severnini is helping us view life through an Italian lens right now on Travel with Rick Steves. He's joining us from his home studio in Crema, outside Milan. Beppe is an editor and columnist at Italy's largest circulation daily newspaper in Milan. Among his books is the international bestseller Ciao America, An Italian Discovers the U.S. His latest looks at the Italian character as seen early on during the pandemic lockdowns of 2020. It's called Italian Lessons, 50 Things We Know About Life Now. And Beppe, one thing I wanted to talk about was the bureaucracy, the corruption, the Berlusconi kind of culture. And I remember somebody told me, a lot of parents only aspire for their child to get a job in the government so that they can be solid and untouchable in their paycheck. That disheartened me, that people would just feel like there's nothing I can do except try not to be fired. I can get into the government and be part of the system where I don't need to produce anything and I'll always be on the payroll. What are your thoughts about the sort of the work ethic in Italy and all of the corruption that happens up in fancy quarters of the government and in corporate life?
Well, corruption is everywhere. I'm a journalist, not only a writer and a travel writer. So I've been writing about corruption, about things that don't quite work, about obnoxious people all over the place, all over the world. You know, I was a correspondent, not only Washington, D.C., in London, but in Moscow. So I've been in China, I've been everywhere, and I've seen there are good people, bad people everywhere. It's not that the center of the word corruption is Italy. It's not true. It would be ludicrous.
Right.
No.
No, that's
But of
true.
Course, we have bad people, and we have organized crime in at least three regions, far too much. But I think, I'm an optimist.
Yeah.
And so I think things are a little better now because at least people are confronting it, especially in those young people in Sicily who won't accept situation that their parents and grandfather did accept with the mafia,
yeah.
for instance,
yeah.
which is really good news.
But, you know, I guess even more than corruption, what is interesting to me is the bureaucracy. The bureaucracy just seems to be non-productive to me. And I would think people would reach a point where they would just say, enough of this craziness. Let's cut out the bureaucracy so we can get something done.
Yes. And the problem is that bureaucracy, I mean, the law is there to make a better society, not to sort of create obstacle for honest people. And there are people that are not honest and they say, okay, let's cut the red tape. Let's do things my way simply because they want to do things their illegal way. And that's a problem. But it is true that I could give you 100 examples. I promise I won't do it now. About life, buying a house, selling a plot of land, whatever, your pensions. We probably take twice as much in terms of time and energy and stress than we should. But again,
what's the
I'm
word
an
for stamp? What's the word for stamp? You got to get a stamp on things.
Timbro.
Timbro. You got to go get that stamp everywhere. Just run over here and get a stamp. Go out to the post box, get a stamp,
office. Don't forget, Rick, that now lots of things are done online in Italy too. Like
many
are changing, and that's a problem for people in the 80s and late 70s and 80s and 90s. That's a real problem, I think, everywhere.
You know, I remember you wrote about how on a train ride across Europe you had a bobblehead of Donald Trump that you put out just so people would talk to you. And I think you have an appetite for talking about politics. We're always thinking about the base. Trump's, they call it the base, you know. Berlusconi had a base. How do you describe Berlusconi's base? Because when you look at Berlusconi from a distance, you just wonder, how could people vote for this man again and again in Italy? But he must have had a durable base. Who was it?
Well, I could ask you same thing about Donald Trump. He seems to have a base of people that
there's a lot of parallels between Berlusconi
and
Trump.
Can I be honest? I mean, I wrote a book about Berlusconi. You mentioned my books in America, but there is one called Mamma Mia, Berlusconi Explained for Posterity and Friends Abroad. It was published 10 years ago, and now it's been reprinted in Italy with the new, because Berlusconi, as you know, passed away. And I've been studying Berlusconi and what happened to how skilled he was to take advantage of certain weaknesses in people's attitude. He was the acquitter in chief. He absolved of us of our sins even before we committed them. It was masterpiece. But compared to Donald Trump, Berlusconi, and I'm not a friend of Berlusconi, I have been extremely critical for 30 years. Trust me, compared to Donald Trump, Silvio Berlusconi is Winston Churchill. Because he was faithful to Europe, to NATO, to international. He was never created those problems. Trump, it's a worry not only for you, but for NATO, for the European Union. You know, what is going to happen in Ukraine if Trump gets reelected? Bam, bam, bam. With Berlusconi, we wouldn't have that. He was far too friendly with Putin. Yes, so Churchill was not friendly with Stalin.
Berlusconi may be gone, but does his base live on? And how is that being capitalized on by today's politicians?
No. Our Prime Minister, Giorgia Meloni, she comes from the far right. But the moment she stepped into power, she realized she had to deal with and leave with the European Union, with NATO. And she completely changed her tune. I've been telling her and her minister more than once, you change your mind. Good. And they said, we never change our mind. Yes, they did change their mind. But I'd never voted for them. But I have to say that they, in a way, inherited Berlusconi's vote and mood. But that kind of, I mean, the people that were passionate about Berlusconi are getting older. Some of them passed away. Some of them are really old. So if you want to talk Berlusconi, you have to look back. Come into Italy and try and see. Let's see what Berlusconi, the Berlusconi sort of signs around, you won't find very much.
Wow, that's very, you know, we can learn from that history. This is Travel with Rick Steves. We've been talking with Beppe Severnini. His book is Italian Lessons, 50 Things We Know About Life Today. Beppe, clearly you've had an interest in comparing America and Italy. What can we learn from each other? Can you sum it up just as a sort of a conclusion for our discussion? What can Italy best learn from America, and what can America learn from Italy?
Well, Italy can learn from America optimism, the ability of bouncing back, not giving up, and, you know, after a disappointment, you bounce back no matter what. I'm convinced that deep down, some Americans think that death is an optional. I think it's great, great attitude. What you can learn from us, many things. Let just say one, which is number 50 on my list of 50 things we know about life now. In Italy, we smile in spite of everything, which I think is a good thing to learn.
You know, that's so fundamental to why I love Italy so much. It can have all sorts of good and bad, crazy stuff going on, and we're all in this together, aren't we? We can smile.
Yes, absolutely.
All right. Beppe Severnini, such a delight to talk with you. Thank you so much for the many fascinating books you've written, and best wishes with your work.
Thank you.
You'll find links to Beppe Severnini's work with the notes for this week's show at ricksteves.com/radio. Discover the lyrical beauty of the smaller towns and historical cities scattered across the Czech Republic. That's next on Travel with Rick Steves. We're at 877-333-7425, or reach us by emailing radio@ricksteves.com.